From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
It is the court giving up its own power to basically control what can be legislated and what not, and giving it back mostly to the states, and saying that the real decisions about abortion are going to be in that 50 different jurisdictions.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College, as we discuss the recent Dobbs opinion handed down by the Supreme Court. This is a special Supreme Court-themed episode of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We'll also talk later on with Michael Pack about his new book on Justice Clarence Thomas. First, we welcome in Dr. Adam Carrington. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
We talked today about the legal reasoning, the analysis of the recent Supreme Court decision on Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. So we know, I imagine everyone knows, this case is about abortion. But what was the exact question, this exact case that was brought before the court?
Right. It had to do with a 15-week abortion ban passed by the state of Mississippi, and precedent had said that viability was the line that cut off the ability to pass a ban like that, and that's what Roe and Casey, the decisions that were ultimately before the court to be overturned, were said. And the court always takes up specific questions, so the way they phrased it, the way they worded it was, quote, whether all pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortions are unconstitutional. And in answering that, they answered the question, well, what about the cases themselves that drew that line of viability, Roe and Casey? And as I think most people know and realize, if you paid any attention, they said that pre-viability prohibitions are constitutional because Roe and Casey themselves were bad decisions that they overturned.
Justice Alito writes for the majority in Dobbs, and he starts by saying Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, the modifier matters, not just that it was wrong, but egregiously wrong. And what they're saying is they're trying to show some respect for precedent and say that not all mistakes in the past by the court should be treated equally, but really bad mistakes, terribly wrong mistakes, especially have a reason to reconsider and possibly overturn. And that's why much of his analysis was to say why it was terribly wrong and the very many facets he wanted to put in for why it was very wrong. So it was the wrong outcome, that they made the wrong decision. It was very badly reasoned, he made the argument. It was hard to apply, and it had proven in general just not workable. The way that the court had tried to say this is how we're going to balance the right of a woman to the right they claimed existed to end a pregnancy and the state's interest in regulating it, things like the viability standard that I'd mentioned before, the undue burden standard that people have been talking about, all of those had just not worked. They had been confusing, they had been contentious, and therefore it's not just that this was wrong at the start, it was so badly wrong and continued to show why it was so badly wrong that it overcame any inhibitions that they may have had to keep precedent and made it a especially ripe case to overturn.
So badly reasoned, poorly reasoned 49 years ago, how did those justices in Alito's mind and the majority's mind get it so wrong 49 years ago in the original Roe decision?
I think if you read underneath what he said, and obviously they want to be respectful toward past justices and the court as an institution, but it seems that they kept repeating one of the dissenting justices that had consistently dissented on abortion cases, Justice White, who is, by the way, a Democratic nominee John F. Kennedy. But he said that this was a raw exercise of judicial power, meaning it's not based in the judicial power's legitimate exercise of applying the law as written, applying the law as intended when it was put into place, in this case, the 14th Amendment in 1868, and that therefore what they were really doing, even if they thought they were interpreting the Constitution legitimately, what they were really doing was imposing their own policy preferences, legislating from the bench, as some people put it, and that I don't think Alito was casting aspersions maybe on their intentions, but saying They had a bad way of looking at the Constitution that allowed them to do that. They weren't looking at, was there a history to this? They weren't looking at what the original meaning and understanding was. This is a case is really a triumph for that approach.
You touched on this, but just to be a little more specific, there's been a lot of talk before the ruling and after the opinion about settled law, stare decisis, long-standing law, nearly 50 years. How did the majority address those topics and those arguments in their opinion?
Well, they said that stare decisis or following precedent matters, that you should respect the court of the past, judges of the past. You should not think that you have to revisit every issue de novo the first time, and therefore there should be some deference there. But that precedent is not the most fundamental. It's made by judges that can err. And also, the rule of law means we're ruled by a text, not by judges. Mm-hmm. And that text is the Constitution. And abortion has been treated, Alito showed, as a special precedent that gets more deference than any others, almost as if it was above the Constitution itself. And the court said that wasn't right. Because of how badly it was originally argued, because of what a bad precedent it was, and because it was so egregiously an affront to what the Constitution's text and tradition and history really said, that we shouldn't give it that special place. So, yes, respect precedent, but don't make it the end-all, because then you make judges the end-all.
Talking with Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College, about the Dobbs opinion from the Supreme Court. Now, some media reports, even in the New York Times, if you can believe it, say the court has banned abortions. Now, we know that's not true. So what is the actual result of the court's action?
It is the court giving up its own power to basically control what can be legislated and what not, and giving it back mostly to the states, and saying that the real decisions about abortion are going to be in that 50 different jurisdictions. Which, by the way, makes it one of the greatest invigorations of federalism, mm-hmm. in at least since the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, maybe even bigger than that. And also returning to the people. There's going to be a lot of decisions now that can be made by the people, voting through their representatives. Although I will also say it means that state courts are going to get really important. There's already lawsuits trying to get state courts to declare a state constitutional right to abortion. So that's something to watch. And what the result is going to be is you're going to have things across the spectrum. Places like California and New York are going to have abortion on demand, mm-hmm. most likely, like they already do. You're going to see states like Alabama and possibly Mississippi. They may pass a new law, even more restrictive than their 15-week, banning abortion for maybe everything but the life of the mother. And then you're going to have stuff in between, everywhere in between, 12-week bans, 15-week bans, just regulations of procedure. You're going to really see a wide variance based on what majorities of particular states want to have happen. So, no, this doesn't ban any abortions. It returns it to the states to decide.
I want to emphasize this point, because the court in this case is ceding its power on the issue back to the states, back to the voters. It's the opposite of a power grab. And yet, some on the left, you'll hear, you know, we're not a democracy anymore. It's minority rule. But this decision returns the power to voters in states, if they wish, to state lawmakers. It's devolving power, again, away from Washington.
Exactly. Away from Washington and away from the judges. They repeatedly say in the majority opinion and the concurring opinions that this is us getting out of this. We have tried to micromanage, really, the abortion debate in a way that has proved completely unworkable, as we were talking about before. And this is, again, one of the greatest giving ups of power by the judiciary, in addition to invigorating federalism and self-rule by the people. It's one of the greatest giving ups of judicial power that we've seen, especially notable in an era where the court seems to want to accrue power to mm-hmm. itself more and more. They gave up power. And so to call it judicial activism, I think, is to make the word only synonymous with what you don't agree with.
Talking with Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics here at Hillsdale College. We'll continue after the break as we look at what Chief Justice John Roberts wrote and what Justice Clarence Thomas wrote on the matter. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR 96.5 FM AM 1460 and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right, even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up, fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Your friendly oil change, Premier in all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change. With our extensive training program, it's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians. So you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Owens is a proud sponsor of Reading Colt 45's baseball. Owens provides top-quality respiratory products and services throughout the North State and Northern Nevada. Products include oxygen therapy featuring the small and portable oxygen concentrators, CPAP machines, and a team focused specifically on providing ongoing CPAP supplies to help you get the best sleep possible. Owens has been in business since 1979 and has been Joint Commission accredited since 2003, allowing them to care for patients in our community when they need them the most. Contact Owens at 1-800-MY-OWENS. That's 1-800-696-9367.
didn't agree, that Roe had been undermined by Casey rather than affirmed because it had changed the reasoning. Like, Roe was more based on the right to privacy, Casey more on the right to liberty, and they had changed the standard from the trimester framework in Roe to the undue burden standard in Casey. So they recognized where both were recognizing or declaring a right to abortion, but both had kind of undermined each other because they couldn't agree themselves. And they thought on both counts that that undermined them as precedents. One, they don't agree, so there's not a unitary building of precedent. But the other is they thought they were both weak and unworkable on their own. So on both counts, they said neither should stand or go forward.
Talking with Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics here at Hillsdale College. You can find him on Twitter, too, at CarringtonAM. His latest writings are linked there. Speaking of writings, the Chief Justice John Roberts, in this case, felt the need to write an opinion that concurs with the judgment, but not necessarily the rationale or reasoning. What is he objecting to in that majority opinion? Why did he feel the need to write his own opinion?
So, yeah, a way to put this is it was actually 6-3 to uphold the Mississippi law, but it was 5-4 to overturn Roe and Casey entirely. I should say entirely because what the justice said is, I want to uphold the Mississippi law, and in doing so, I want to overturn Roe and Casey insofar as they force the viability standard. That hasn't been workable. But a thing to think about Justice Roberts is he's very concerned about two things. One, the institutional reputation of the court, and he tends to think that means controversial decisions they should step back from, although it's hard to say how this was going to not be controversial no matter what. But the other is what's sometimes called judicial minimalism. Decide as narrowly as you can. Don't go big if you don't have to. And what he kind of said was, well, let's revisit what the question was that I said in the first part of this discussion. That we were trying to answer whether all pre-viability prohibitions on abortions were unconstitutional. Well, let's just say no, and leave the broader question of how far that question goes for maybe another case down the road. So that's where he wanted to uphold the Mississippi law and leave it there. Leave the further questions that the court decided to answer for a later time. What Justice Alito in his majority opinion basically said is, you're creating another unworkable standard out of thin air, just like what Roe and Casey did.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not repeat the same mistake for a third time. Let's just get out of it.
The majority in this case clearly writes in the opinion, the Alito opinion, that this is not to be construed as any sort of, it's not going to affect previous decisions on gay marriage, birth control. Justice Clarence Thomas, though, in his concurring opinion, says, hey, maybe we should reconsider all of this court's substantive due process precedents, which might include some of those issues. So what is substantive due process, and what does Justice Thomas want to look at? What does he want to examine?
Right. Well, there is, both in the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments, a clause that says that both between them, the national and the state governments, can't deny a person their life, liberty, or property without what's called due process of law. So process is the word in the text that is the focus of controversy, because it seems that a process is a set of procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So before you can have your life taken, your liberty taken, your property taken, government has to give you a fair trial or right to counsel, no illegal searches and seizures, that it basically has to follow the rules for determining guilt or innocence, determining legislative process. You know, they have to pass the laws correctly if they're going to punish you, if they're going to do something like that. Substantive due process says that you get more than process. There are elements to your life, liberty, or property the government can't infringe on, whether it follows fair procedures or not. And there's a long line of cases, Roe and Casey were just one of them, built on this substantive reading, such as marriage decisions, both banning interracial marriage, banning prohibitions on contraception, recognizing a right to same-sex marriage. And the problem, though, that Thomas is pointing out is that substantive process seems like an oxymoron. Substance, process, they seem like they're not the same thing. And so Thomas has said for a while, we need to question those precedents because that's just not the way the text reads. Now, I'll say two things about that because that's obviously made some people nervous that may be more amenable to Roe, but less being overturned, but less amenable to some of these other long lines of cases. Two things is, one, Thomas has not said that there aren't protections for substantive rights. He has said that the Privileges or Immunities Clause, a forgotten and long ignored part of the 14th Amendment, would be a source of those rights. In fact, he said the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms would be the source for that.
Mm-hmm.
The other is, as far as questioning these precedents themselves, he's one vote. No one joined him. And Justice Kavanaugh actually wrote an opinion emphasizing, concurring opinion emphasizing, we're not questioning any of these others. We're not questioning substantive due process. And I say Kavanaugh because he matters, because it seems pretty clear he's now the fifth vote in 5-4 decisions. So if he's not on board, then there's probably not five votes for it. So that would be the two points I would stress as far as there is a place even for Thomas for fundamental substantive rights. But as far as questioning these precedents, he's one man, and it doesn't seem it's coming down the pike anytime soon.
The opponents of the opinion, supporters of abortion, use language essentially saying that a constitutional right has been removed via this Dobbs decision. Is that accurate in any way?
Certainly not if you agree with the outcome of the case. And what I mean by that is, and I thought the majority had the better argument, was Alito's majority opinion makes clear repeatedly that abortion was never a constitutional right. That if we're really looking at what the Constitution protects, what the Constitution says, there's no history to this.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the history is quite the opposite. The people that ratified the 14th Amendment are the same people that were banning abortion or had long-standing bans on abortion throughout the country. And therefore, this right was created by judges, not by the text of the Constitution itself. And because of that, because it was a policy imposition by the judges, it never was a right. It was made up, it was, and therefore we're not taking away a right, the majority is saying. We are merely restoring what the Constitution says about this issue and leaving it to the states.
Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. Find him on Twitter, at CarringtonAM, where recent writings are linked. Dr. Carrington, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Up next, we'll talk with Michael Pack. His new book is Created Equal, Clarence Thomas, in His Own Words. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW Renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
What does great pizza and ice-cold beer have in common? Charlie's Tap House and Mobile Catering, of course. Charlie's Pizza, Pasta, and More, made from scratch with old family recipes using only the finest ingredients. Charlie's will not disappoint when you bite into the bacon spicy Mambo Pizza. Get ready for an experience you won't find anywhere else. Call Charlie's today to book their patio for your next birthday, baby shower, anniversary, or any other private party. Remember, everything is homemade using secret family recipes. Be sure to try their famous sundial steak steak salad with perfectly grilled steak tossed in their homemade tomato vinaigrette dressing. Charlie's Tap House, your ultimate beer experience. Charlie's Tap House rule number one, come for the homemade pizza, stay for the beer wall. Charlie's Tap House rule number two, never stay empty-handed. Charlie's Tap House and mobile catering in two locations, Anderson Outlets and in Reading at the corner of Shasta and East Streets. Charlie's Tap House for dine-in, takeout, or delivery. Ask about booking their patio for your next private event. Charlie's Tap House, bringing family and friends together.
Convert your calling into a career at Shasta College this fall. Get a jump start on being transfer ready or boost your current career skills quickly and affordably with a certificate or degree. Our fall semester offers flexible class times and formats with online and more in-person offerings. Plan your tomorrow today by enrolling at Shasta College. Fall semester classes begin August 15th. Achieve more. Earn more. Shasta College. www.shastacollege.edu. Enroll online today.
Veterans, did you know that Shasta County Veterans Service Office is open to all veterans who have served our nation? Whether a combat veteran or a member of the reserves with limited active duty time, you have earned benefits. If you have any military benefit or veteran-related questions, call 530-225-5616 or stop by Shasta County Veterans Service Office at 1855 Shasta Street, Redding, California. This message is brought to you by Korean War veteran Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary, California Veterans Affairs. When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
On Clarence Thomas, also called Created Equal. So, what is this book when you compare it to what the movie was?
Well, the movie, as you know, Scott, was based on really a long interview with Justice Thomas and a shorter interview with his wife, Chitty. And they're the only ones interviewed in the film. I set it up so that Clarence Thomas could look directly at the camera and tell his story to the viewers from his beginnings to today in his own words, hence the title, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. So I interviewed them both for over 30 hours over several months, and it's the longest interview any Supreme Court justice has ever sat for in the history of the Supreme Court, particularly notable because Clarence Thomas is not known to like interviews in the first place, so we were honored that he gave us these long interviews. But because it's only a two-hour film, not that much of the interview went into the film. And as you said, the film was very successful when it premiered in 2020. It was in a huge number of theaters. Was in 110 theaters before COVID came and shut it down, which is a vast amount for a documentary, which they're usually in 5 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then it premiered on PBS that year in May, and you know, it was broadcast nationally, and then it was streaming. And so lots of people saw it, and people kept asking, what else did he say? What else was in the interview? Actually, Mark Paletta had the idea that we should do the book. We should take more of the material in that was in the interview and put it in a book form. And the book has 95% new material, so there's not much overlap with the film. There's more in the 30 hours than are in the book, but we put the best parts of the interview in the book. So it's really a way to get a really deeper sense of what kind of Clarence Thomas thinks and his life story.
You mentioned this is perhaps the longest, and really unprecedented kind of look at a sitting Supreme Court justice. Why do you think Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas, agreed to do this and tell his story in this lengthy, in-depth and personal way?
Well, I think it kind of creeped up on him, I have to say. So the whole project began, the project of the film and the book together, began when some of Clarence Thomas's friends that also knew me grew concerned about how his legacy and his life were being defined by his enemies. There was an upcoming then HBO movie called Confirmation with Kerry Washington as Anita Hill, and it was an attack on Justice Thomas, and there have been many others. Showtime did a fictional film, and Anita Hill did a documentary, and on and on. So they wanted him to respond, and so they approached me, and as soon as I met with Justice Thomas, who I did not know before, and I didn't know that much about, but it only takes one meeting to know that he has a great life story, and he has a great way of telling stories. So that's how the project began. We originally were going to do a traditional documentary where we interviewed people on all sides of these questions that he addresses, like affirmative action and abortion, but also like his own life story and people from his past who had their own views of things. But if we were to interview, the usual 15 or 20 people in all sides of these issues, Clarence Thomas's voice would be lost. So after doing some initial research with Mark, actually, I came to the conclusion that the best way to do it was for him to look right at the camera and tell his story in his own words. And it was designed really for PBS, and that way it didn't take a point of view. It's his point of view. And you don't have to agree with him. You don't have to like it. But it's worth hearing. He's one of the most important political figures in America, and it's worth hearing what he has to say. And so it did very well, even among people who don't agree with him.
Michael Pack is with us. The book, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. You say earlier there are two ways to use the book. You can sort of search for your topics you want to learn about. It's presented in a Q&A format, or you can read it through, and it reads as a biography, an autobiography in a way, of Clarence Thomas's life. And that's sort of the way I want to walk through the book, is walking through his life. If we start early, Michael, and we look at his influences when he was young, his grandfather, the nuns at school, how was Clarence Thomas shaped as a young man?
Well, it's important perhaps to go even further back. He was born in Pinpoint, Georgia, a Gullah-speaking area outside of Savannah. His father left before he could even remember, so he was raised by his mother. Then his mother took him to Savannah when he was about 6 or 7 years old, him and his brother. And as he said, he went from rural poverty to urban squalor. And in Savannah, he had a really tough life. She worked as a maid. She didn't have enough money. They were hungry. They were, cold in the winter. She would drop him off at the local school, and he would just wander off. No one cared. He'd wander the streets of Savannah. And then finally, after a couple of years there, she saw that she didn't have the resources to raise them properly, and brought them to her father, Clarence Thomas's grandfather. And he and his wife essentially then raised Clarence Thomas and his brother. And that's what turned his life around. That's the influences you mentioned earlier. He was really influenced by his grandfather, the biggest influence on his life. And his grandfather gave him discipline, hard work, turned his life around. But he himself was really poor. He had a third grade education, but he had really less than 6 months of schooling. He was functionally illiterate, but he believed in hard work. He himself was hardworking. He had a home heating oil truck, and he gave Clarence Thomas that kind of discipline. And then he was a Catholic, an unusual thing for an African American in the South in those years, and he sent Justice Thomas to parochial school, and there it was all black. Don't forget, this was the segregated South. Mm-hmm. But these Irish nuns also reflected his grandfather's values, gave him hard work, discipline, and a really rigorous curriculum. And Clarence Thomas thrived in that environment. And that was a big influence on him until he later rejected it and began his more torturous journey to where he ended up.
Readers might not know this, but Justice Thomas was nearly a priest. He attended seminary for a few years, and that's covered in the book. And you get into what's called, or what he called, his radical era. This is around the time he's at Holy Cross, taught by the Jesuits at Holy Cross, and there's a time when he, it's just his radical era. What was happening during these years, and what were the influences on Justice Thomas during this time?
I think that's a very important period. I'm glad you called attention to it. He definitely, you know, he did want to be a priest. He entered the seminary, and while the parochial schools he went to for lower schools were all black. This was already the mid '60s, and the seminaries had been all white, and he was one of the first black students to integrate them. So he started to experience some racism in the seminaries. And for example, when he was watching TV, when Martin Luther King was shot, one of the white seminarians says, "I hope that SOB dies." For Clarence Thomas, that tore it. He really felt the church was failing his people. And it was this. So this is 68, and he was caught up, and he felt, you know, it's all racism. And as he said, race and racism explained everything. He became what he called an angry black man. And then his grandfather kicked him out of his home, and because he left the priesthood. And this was like the only home Clarence Thomas had ever had, really, and it was pretty shocking. And it fueled his anger. And as you say, he went to Holy Cross, which is where he could get a scholarship, and he became a radical. He helped form the Black Student Union. He helped bring the Black Panthers to campus to speak. And as he said, they liked everybody, and the more radical, the better. Stokely Carmichael, H.R.A.P. Brown, Malcolm X. And he one of the reasons Thomas in the end understands the left is he was a radical. And it took him a while to work through that and come out the other side.
Speaking with Michael Pack, the new book is Created Equal on the Life and Philosophy of Clarence Thomas. We'll continue with Michael Pack in just a moment on the Supreme Court themed episode of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
At Shasta Regional Medical Center, we're specialists in emergency care with the experience and training to deliver expert diagnosis and treatment to all emergency patients. Shasta Regional Medical Center is certified as an advanced primary stroke facility and is one of the nation's 50 top cardiovascular hospitals and is a fully accredited chest pain center. In an emergency, when every minute has meaning and every second counts, choose Shasta Regional Medical Center, your choice for emergency care. Shasta Regional Medical Center, caring for our community when minutes matter.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
Now is a great time to prepare for this year's upcoming wildfire season. Reading Electric Utility and City of Reading staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our facilities and to the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home, clear debris from your roof and gutters, and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity of power lines, call 530-224-4356. We all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
veterans. Did you know that Shasta County Veterans Service Office is open to all veterans who have served our nation? Whether a combat veteran or a member of the reserves with limited active duty time, you have earned benefits. If you have any military benefit or veteran-related questions, call 530-225-5616 or stop by Shasta County Veterans Service Office at 1855 Shasta Street, Redding, California. This message is brought to you by Korean War veteran Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary, California Veterans Affairs.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
You're listening to KCNR Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming live at KCNR1460.com.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
He thought it was over. He had finished testifying. He and his wife, Ginny, went off on vacation to relax after this really grueling hearing. You know, that was like Bork's. And then the Anita Hill revelations came out, and the accusations of sexual harassment. So then he had to come back for part two of the hearings, the part most of us remember, mm-hmm. that were not like Bork. That was sort of the new twist to go after him on this other ground. Actually, I think Clarence Thomas says this. It was like you run a marathon, it's over, you relax, and then they tell you, oops, you gotta run another marathon.
Yeah.
And this one, he was, as Ginny says in the book, he was totally spent. He had used all his energy and kind of intellectual might the first time, so he was spent. So this time, they really, Ginny says strongly that they defeat, fall back on their spiritual sense. You know, they had to put themselves in God's hands, is the way they saw it, I think. And that's what happened. So he wasn't prepared for that. I think it took them completely by surprise.
Michael Justice Thomas, at the time the nominee, gives this very famous response in front of the committee, calling it a high-tech lynching. In the book, I don't know if it's, I can't remember if it's you or Mark, then remark, well, it didn't work. And Justice Thomas says, well, in a sense it did because they win the propaganda war. Do you think that Justice Thomas believed their main objective was to keep him off the Supreme Court or simply to tarnish him and his reputation in the process?
Well, I think their goal was to keep him off the court. But once he got on the court, I think what Justice Thomas meant to say, and I was the one that was conducting the interviews, although Mark is largely responsible for all the explanatory footnotes. But I think he means to say that they kept up the propaganda war. All right, so he gets confirmed. After that very dramatic high-tech lynching speech, he's convince the American people. They're 2-1 in favor of Justice Thomas. They don't believe in Anita Hill. He's confirmed. But the left did not stop there. They continued to attack him, as we said at the very beginning of this interview. You know, they made films and documentaries and articles and books. The attacks have been relentless, and this sort of elevation of Anita Hill into a hero. I mean, with the Me Too movement came around, you know, they called her the Rosa Parks of the Me Too movement, and she got a big job in Hollywood in charge of something. And so the attack on Justice Thomas was relentless. So he feels they continued the propaganda war, and the goal of the propaganda war is to weaken his power as a conservative justice and as an example to any other black man or woman who has the temerity to buck the consensus.
Michael Pack is with us. The book Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. And in his own words, Clarence Thomas does discuss some hot-button issues through the course of the book, the latter portion especially. He talks about abortion. He talks about affirmative action. I want to ask about that. You ask him about critics who say that he benefited from the kind of preferential policies, this affirmative action type policies that the justice now attacks. What do you say to those critics? You ask Clarence Thomas. What did he say to those critics?
Well, I don't think. I mean, he doesn't feel that he did benefit from them. On one hand, I mean, in Holy Cross, he makes a big distinction about the way that Holy Cross reached out to African Americans in the way it's done today. It wasn't a quota system. It wasn't numerically based. The head of the school went around the country searching for talented young African Americans, especially from poor backgrounds. They made that effort, and they made sure that those people had some of the support necessary to succeed. And he compares that to sort of what is often called the mismatch today, where because of quotas, very talented black men and women go to colleges that maybe are a notch or two above where they should have been, and then they don't do well, and then they get discouraged.
You ask Justice Thomas about his judicial philosophy, ceding that he doesn't like labels, and he says, we're all originalists, we're all textualists when you get down to it. What did he mean by that?
Well, he didn't mean that. He meant that we, the average people, are instinctively textualists.
Right.
As he gives this example, you come up to a stop sign and you stop. It says stop, you obey it. You don't say, what's the penumbra or what are the added things it's trying to say. He says we're all instinctively textualists, all of us, the average people with whom he relates. He always tries to go back to the public meaning of the words that were intended at the time both the Constitution and later amendments were written. He doesn't like labels. I think he's pretty comfortable with the originalist textualist label. I have Jenny is quoted as saying in the book and the film that Justice Scalia said that Justice Thomas was a bloodthirsty originalist and that he took that as a badge of honor. So that's a version of somewhat accepting a label, unusual for Justice Thomas.
Michael, clearly you did not have a chance to ask Justice Thomas about the leak of the Dobbs opinion,
yeah,
the initial draft of the Dobbs opinion. However, I think through your hours and hours of time spent with him, you can give us some insight on what Justice Thomas thinks about the court as an institution, its norms, the way things are done on the court, and what kind of a break and what kind of a tear in the tradition of the court this leak really was.
You're right. I haven't had a chance to ask him. But I would be shocked if he is not deeply upset by that leak. I mean, he values the tradition of the court. And he feels some of the traditions that were in place when he began have withered away in a bad way. But that one was in place right up to this year. And I think it's really a horrible thing for the court. I mean, it is a huge loss. I hope that they actually find the leaker and that person is disciplined. I'm not optimistic about it, but I hope so. I mean, there's often talk of that. In the Clarence Thomas hearing, the Anita Hill's some of her things were leaked illegally, and they were going to Senator Biden said he would find the leaker, and they never did. And it's very hard to find leakers after the fact.
Yeah.
In this one, the potential pool of leakers is pretty small. I hope they continue to look.
Michael Pack, he is co-author, along with Mark Paoletta, of the new book, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. The documentary movie also of the same name, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. Michael, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me on, and it's always a pleasure speaking to you.
That will wrap up this special edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour with a focus on the U.S. Supreme Court. Our thanks to Adam Carrington from the Politics Department here at Hillsdale College as he took us through the Dobbs opinion from the Supreme Court, and then Michael Pack, co-author of the new book, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You can also find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, and iHeart. Just search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or find us on Facebook. Email the program at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. To find out more about Hillsdale College, head to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, I'm Devin, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arnn, on what the founders meant by general welfare.
The great preamble of our Constitution states that the purpose of the document is in part to promote the general welfare. Contrary to the modern understanding of that term, the founders understood welfare to mean public good or happiness. This was understood in accordance with the principles of the Declaration of Independence. Such happiness is contingent on securing to each citizen his natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Because this requires the government be limited, the powers of the federal government were enumerated, and local matters were reserved to state authority. This was precisely intended to secure these inalienable rights and in turn promote the general welfare.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Hi, I'm Joshua Palladino, a student at Hillsdale College. Here's PhD candidate Christian Winner with a quote from C.S. Lewis on tyranny.
C.S. Lewis wrote, "Of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It would be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. To be cured against one's will and cured of states which we may not regard as disease is to be put on a level of those who have not yet reached the age of reason, or those who never will, to be classed with infants, imbeciles, and domestic animals."
Hillsdale College, pursuing truth, defending liberty since 1844.
James Madison writes in Federalist 51 that men are not angels. Their passions and self-interest often get the better of their reason and sense of justice. So we need government in order to protect our rights against those who would take them away. But for the same reason, Madison writes, government must be limited because people in government have passions and interests too. Many Americans today forget this. Supposing that we can do away with constitutional limits on government. Supposing that the unelected bureaucrats being put in charge of our health care, for example, will rule as if they are angels. If Madison was correct, however, it will become clear that they are humans, not angels. Learn more about the Constitution at ConstitutionMinute.com.
Hillsdale College, defending liberty since 1844.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical